Welcome to Behind the Numbers with CEO Mike McCann, a new series where our CEO addresses your most pressing investor questions following our earnings call. In this short 10-minute recap, we'll dive into quarterly results, market trends and outlook, ensuring you hear directly from our leadership about the momentum at Limbaugh. Whether you're an existing investor exploring new opportunities or part of our team, this is your go-to where clarity meets strategy, straight from our CEO to you. Welcome to this episode of Behind the Numbers with Limbaugh's president and CEO, Mike McCann. Mike, thanks for joining the show again today.
Glad to be here.
Let's jump right into the first question. So for listeners who may not be familiar with Limbaugh, can you explain what the company does and what sets you apart in the industry?
Sure. Whenever I think about Limbaugh, I think about us being a building system solutions firm. And what does that mean? That means we work in mission-critical environments. And we have six core vertical markets that we work in. Our goal is to make sure that the main systems in the building are up and running, we're updating infrastructure, and we're a true partner for that facility. We find that we work best for facilities that have scale, multiple buildings, sometimes over multiple geographies. And we do it very much in a customer-centric account take focus. So when I think about what sets us apart is we always look at things in terms of it, in relationship in terms of being a trusted advisor. We look at things from a long-term aspect from a customer. We want to make sure, yes, we're taking care of their short-term issues, problems, break-fix type work, but we're also thinking about it from a long-term perspective as well, too. We want to be a partner for the next 10, 20, 30 years with that customer.
And you've talked about Limbaugh's growth strategy in the past being built on three core pillars. Can you walk us through those for those listeners who may be new?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first pillar is shifting our revenue from general contractor GCR work towards ODR, owner direct relationships. And our goal is to get in front of the owner as much as possible, work for the owner as much as possible. So whether that's repair work, maintenance work, renovations, retrofits within an existing building, we want to get to the point where that work is as predictable as possible. And whether that's quick hit repair work or that's an infrastructure project, that's the type of work that we want to be in that mindset. And we want to be in front of the end user where we can solve problems. The second pillar is expanding our product and service offerings, getting to the point where we have the tools that we need to really be that long-term trusted advisor to customers, introducing new capabilities, changing our competitive landscape. And there's a lot more opportunity for us in that second pillar to keep going. And then the third pillar is strategic M&A. A lot of our M&A has been focused on geographic expansion. We've done six deals in the last 3 or 4 years. And going forward, we'll continue from a geographic expansion point. But we're also thinking about pillar number two as well, too, that service and products offerings. Where else can we invest in that to ultimately continue to change the company towards a building system solutions firm?
Mike, we've been learning about your transition from GCR to ODR. So let's talk about the second and third pillars. What do these expanding products and services include?
Sure. So there's various things and there's a lot to think about. So, and I'm also going to kind of introduce it this way. When we think about our relationships, I would think about in terms of a national and a local level. The local relationship, a lot of times, are started out through OPEX work, sometimes through a maintenance agreement. The national relationships we've noticed, and we've had a particular early success from a healthcare perspective, is started from a professional service perspective. Our whole goal was to open up a sales channel. We're in front of the customer acting as an advisor, and then we can offer different services that can enhance that type of experience. So if it's a product offering, it could be custom equipment. As an example, within our industrial air purchase that we completed in late 2023, there was a product line, custom air handling equipment, different types of products. So that's an example. From a service offering perspective, I would think about that in terms of whether it's a service that we don't offer, or primary mechanical and plumbing, or it's the type of professional service that can help enhance our experience as well, too. So the nice thing about that is there's a ton of white space for us to invest in. But our goal was always get in front of the owner, become a trusted advisor, then understand what else do we need to enhance that experience.
And how do these expanded products and services help you accomplish your strategic objective?
So a couple different ways. And when I think about our ability to cross-sell, we have so many different customers. What other different products can we offer to that same customer? We may have that intense building knowledge, that technical expertise, and they rely on us. And when they rely on us, they start to look at other aspects of their building as well too, and think where else can Limbach help as well too. I think the other thing too is when we have a project, for example, and we're able to supply more components to that project, that's another added benefit as well too. So it really comes down to our ability to continue to have a consultative, proactive sale and our ability to layer different products and offerings that can enhance margins over the long term.
And do you have an example of expanded services that you've been able to provide?
Sure. I'm going to specifically talk to our national healthcare approach that we've had. So this was done very much organically. We've learned at a national level, our best way in is professional services. There's a couple of different services that we offer that's very different than what we've done at the branch. One is program management, which we act kind of an owner advisory. And sometimes even within that, we actually augment the owner's staff as well too. I think about facility assessments, the energy benchmarking we do. That may be an existing facility they have. That may be a facility that they're looking to invest in as well too. Could be other types of engineering analysis that we do. All those type of professional services ultimately are very attractive to national customers because we can leverage it over all of their different locations. Even within the third quarter, one of the customers that we had done facility assessments in Q2, we were able to turn those facility assessments to $12 million in capital projects. So a lot of times that professional service ends up being kind of the starter to continuing that relationship, and we're helping them make the right decisions. And the nice thing is that we've seen in healthcare, it's very expandable. We don't necessarily always have to be within those geographies as well, too.
Let's move to the third pillar, which is strategic acquisitions. You made your largest acquisition ever in July of this year, which was Pioneer Power. How is the integration proceeding, and what value-enhancing opportunities are you seeing to date?
Sure. So the first thing we're doing, and I would say generally, we're following the same playbook that we've done in the other five deals as well, too. And it really comes down to, you know, two different phases. Phase one is about transitioning the accounting, operating system, structure. There's a lot of work that takes almost fully that year one, and that's the phase that we're in. And then as we get to year two and three, it's a matter of how can we look at the go-to-market strategy? We want to follow the same look that we've done with the last five deals, but also organic branches as well, too. How do we deploy a proactive sales staff? How do we change the way to go to market? How do we enhance the brand and the experience they have as well, too? So we're very much focused on that accounting system and systems transition, but we're also looking ahead to think about how can we continue to improve gross profit margins and ultimately bottom line EBITDA margins as well, too. We think it's a great opportunity, and we can apply the same lessons learned that we've done in previous deals as well, too.
Mike, this quarter you spent some time breaking down the different revenue streams that make up the ODR business. Can you share with us how you look at ODR from a sales perspective?
Sure. So this is the first time that we've talked about this in the prepared remarks for how we break down our ODR revenue. So I would think about a third of it is basically maintenance contracts, projects, fixed price projects, less than $10,000 in T&M. And year to date, that's made up approximately a third of our revenue. And think about that super quick burning. That stuff is going to burn, could burn within a month, 2 weeks, a quarter, very, very quick burning. And then the other two thirds is fixed price projects over $10,000. And in the prepared remarks, we talked about the average price of those fixed price projects over $10,000 being $245,000. So you compare that towards owner GCR projects with an average price of $2.9 million. And you can see those are also very quick moving as well, too. So I would also think about the one third quick burning. A lot of times we'll set up the two thirds fixed projects as well, too. A lot of the relationship we have, we could be doing various types of revenue on a particular account at various times. But I would think about it as a lot of smaller transactions, a lot of transactions that will move very quickly. And our goal is to create these relationships where we're as sticky as possible. We understand the building and they depend on us. And that dependence and trust ultimately builds that super long-term relationship as well, too.
And you've recently been investing more in your sales organization. Can you help us understand how this supports your strategy?
Sure. So we've invested in sales the last 3 years. A vast majority of our sales staff was hired in the last 3 years. And what's interesting about our model, which is opportunistic and sometimes challenging as well, too, is we really have to sell the work. And it's kind of having those in-depth relationships. We're not sitting there bidding projects and have a huge estimating staff. That was more of our previous model. It's about being reactive to the needs and the reactive needs turning into proactive type relationships as well too. So a lot of the accounts that we've been working on for a number of years, it's the point kind of even going into next year is how can we think about long-term planning for them? Can we use data? Whether it's utility spend, energy benchmarking, how can we use that to help them make the right decisions and ultimately make the right decisions, whether it's an OPEX or a CAPEX spend? It's about being proactive. It's about understanding the customer and thinking long-term for them.
And what are some examples of this proactive approach in action?
Yeah, and this is kind of a perfect example how that one-third quick burning turned into two-thirds fixed price project work. We've had a customer in Florida that we've been taking care of their emergency repair work for 2 or 3 years, keeping up with the best that we can. But even within that, we always go and examine different buildings and different places of the building to understand if there's potential issues that need to happen. So our on-site account manager was looking at the main cooling feed for the system and noticed some deterioration. And we were concerned about that. We were concerned about their ability to, you know, if something were to happen, our ability to provide cooling to the building or shut down the building if needed or a certain piece of it. So we examined the piping and found out there was a deterioration that had occurred. We went to the customer and said, listen, this we can continue to repairing, but we want to be a good partner. We're thinking about the long term as well, too. So we actually worked our way up through the account. We talked to the facility manager, gave our compelling story of why they need to make a major upgrade, took that to the C-suite, including the chief medical officer as well too, and say, listen, there's the return on investment to do this. There's also an avoidance of something to happen. And that led to a proactive project as well too. So that's a real success story for us. And we hope to kind of continue those. And ultimately that relationship itself has kind of been expanded as well too, because of that proactive nature. That's what customers are looking for.
So now looking ahead, Mike, what's the outlook for the rest of 2025?
Sure. So our 2025 guidance is $650 to $680 million in revenue with adjusted EBITDA of 80 to 86%. We're still, the ODR revenue is still going to represent 70 to 80%. That's what we're guiding to at this point. A couple assumptions that we updated. We updated the total organic growth from 10 to 15 to 7 to 10. And we also adjusted the GP and SG&A based upon the contribution of their of Pioneer Power as well too. And I would look at that as there's an opportunity once we, you know, continue to add value to get the Pioneer Power margins up to the point of where the rest of the business is. And that's tremendous value and value add over a period of time as well too. So the other thing is we continue to see large contributions, not only from the acquisitions, but as well as from organic business as well too. We talked about organic ODR growth being 20 to 25% for 2025. So we're really looking forward to the finish of the year. And we feel like we're in a good position and to continue our long-term journey towards being a building system solutions firm.
Thanks, Mike, for the comprehensive update and for sharing these insights. So what are your top priorities as we head into Q4 and wrap up 2025?
So top three priorities as we kind of wrap up Q4 and head into 2026 as well too is capitalize on fourth quarter with customers. Some of the customers in our institutional markets, a little bit of a pause in Q3, and we're looking for that work to pick up, especially from a quick burning perspective as well too. We're also looking forward to Pioneer Power having a strong and meaningful contribution in Q4, no different than Q3 as well too. We're looking to deepen our relationships and really start planning for 2026 with these customers. We have a proactive sales team. I'm looking forward to that contribution continuing, if not exceeding contributions as we go into the end of the year, but as well into 2026 and 2027 as well too. And lastly, we've got a journey with Pioneer Power, no different than we have the other acquisitions, but we're very much excited about the opportunity as we move them into our platform and we get into the next phase. Next phase of our value creation, look for a margin enhancement over time as well too. So we're really encouraged by the momentum. We're really focused on making sure we're delivering long-term to our customers, building a diversified platform and having strategic discipline as we continue to become a building system solutions firm.
Perfect. Well, thanks, Mike. Thanks for this update on Q3 for 2025. And thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Behind the Numbers. We will see you next time as we come back to wrap up Q4 and 2025.